Chapter 5 They came into view of the headquarters of the Lazy Bee with the autumn sun low over Mesa Verde, producing shadow patterns on Bridge Timber Mountain. She had been thinking more of home sites lately, and he thought now that this little valley would be a beautiful place for Janet and him. The house in the cluster of cottonwoods below them would be far, far too large for him to feel comfortable in, but Janet would love it. Finch had been doing the talking on the drive up from Shiprock. After the first 50 miles of that, she began listening just enough to nod or grunt at the proper intervals. Mostly he was thinking about Janet Pete and the differences between what they liked and what they didn't. This house, for example. Women usually had most to say about living places, but if he retained veto power, theirs certainly wouldn't be anything as huge as the fieldstone, timber, and slate mansion the Breedlove family had built for itself, even if they could afford it, which they certainly never would. That reminded she of the white Porsche that had zipped past him yesterday. Why did he connect it to Janet? Because it had class, as did she. And was beautiful. And sure, she'd like it. Who wouldn't? So why did he resent it? Was it because it was a part of the world she came from in which he would never be comfortable or understand? Maybe. But now he was about to walk in and see if he could get a widow to identify a bunch of stuff that would tell her that her husband was truly dead. Tell her, that is, unless she already knew, having killed him herself, or arranged it. He'd worry about the Porsche later. The Breedlove mansion was now just across the fence. According to Finch, old Edgar Breedlove had built it as a second home, his first one being in Denver, from which he ran his mining operations. But he'd never lived in it. He'd bought the ranch because his prospectors had found a molybdenum deposit on the high end of the property. But the ore price fell after the war, and somehow or other the place got left to a grandson, Harold. Hal had adopted his granddad's policy of overgrazing it and letting it run down. "That ain't happening now," Finch had told him. "This place ain't going to hell while DeMott's running it. He's sort of a tree-hugger. That's what people say. Say he never got married 'cause he's in love with this place." She parked under a tree, a polite distance from the front entrance, turned off the ignition, and sat, killing the time needed by hosts to get decent before welcoming guests. Finch, another empty countryman, seemed to understand that. He yawned, stretched, and examined the half-dozen cows in the feedlot beside the barn with a professional eye. "How do you know all this about the Breedlove Ranch and DeMott and everything?" she asked. "This is Colorado. It's not your territory." "Ranching and stealing cows off of ranches don't pay much attention to state lines," Finch said, not taking his eyes off the cows. "The Lazy Bee has leases in New Mexico. Makes 'em my business." Finch extracted a 20-stick pack of chewing gum from his jacket pocket, offered it to Chi, extracted 2 sticks for himself, and started chewing them. "Besides," he said, "you got to have something going to make the job interesting. I got one particular guy I keep looking for. Most of these cow thieves are hungries. Folks run out of eating money or got a payment due, and they go out and get themselves a cow or two to sell. Or on the reservation, maybe they got somebody sick in the family and they're having a sing for the patient, and they need a steer to feed all the kinfolks coming in. I never worry too much about them. If they keep doing it, they get careless and they get caught, and the neighbors talk to them about it, get it straightened out. But then there's some others who are in it for business. It's easy money and it beats working."
"Who's this one you're specially after?" Finch laughed. "If I knew that, we wouldn't be talking about it now, would we?"
"I guess not," Chi said, impressed with how insulting Finch could be even when he was acting friendly.
"We'd just go out and get 'em then, wouldn't we?" Finch concluded.
But all I know about him is the way he operates. Modus operandi, if you know your Latin. He always picks the spread-out ranches where a few head won't be missed for a while. He always takes something that he can sell quick. No little calves that you have to wean. No big, expensive, easy-to-trace breeding bulls. Never messes with horses because some people get attached to a nag and go out looking for it. Has some other tricks, too, like he finds a good place beside a back road where there wouldn't be any traffic to bother him, and he'll put out feed. Usually good alfalfa hay. Do it several times so the cattle get in the habit of coming up and looking for it when they see his truck parking. Finch stopped, looked at Chi, waited for a comment. Pretty smart, Chi said.
Yes, sir, Finch agreed. So far he's been smarter than me.
Chi had no comment on that. He glanced at his watch. Another 3 minutes and he'd go ring the doorbell and get this job over with. Then I found a place or two where he fixed up the fence so he could get him through it fast. He paused again, seeing if Chi understood this. Chi did, but to hell with Finch.
You could cut the wire, of course, Finch explained. But then the herd gets out on the road and somebody notices it right away and they do a head count and know some are missing.
Chi said, really?
Yeah, Finch said. Anyway, I've been after this son of a bitch for years now. Every time I take off from home to come out this way, he's the one I'm thinking of.
Chi didn't comment.
Zorro, Finch said. That's what I call him. And this time, I think I'll finally get him.
How? Silence, unusual for Finch, followed. Then he said,
well, now that's sort of complicated.
You think it might be Dumont?
Why you say that?
Well, you wanted to come up here, and you've collected all that information about him.
If you're a brand inspector, you learn to pick up on all the gossip you can hear if you want to get your job done. And there was some talk that Dumont paid off a mortgage by selling a bunch of calves nobody knew he owned.
So what's the gossip about the widow Breedlove? Chi asked. Who was the lover who helped her kill her husband? What do the neighbors say about that? Finch was wearing a broad smile.
People I know up in Mancus have her down as the broken-hearted, wronged, abandoned bride. The majority of them, that is. They figured Hal ran off with some bimbo.
How about the minority?
They think she had herself a local boyfriend, somebody to keep her happy when Hal was off in New York or climbing his mountains or playing his games.
They have a name for him?
Not that I ever heard, Finch said.
Which bunch you think is right?
About her? I never thought about it, Finch said. None of my business, that part of it wasn't. Talk like that just means that folks around here didn't like Hal.
What did he do?
Well, for starters, he got born in the East, Finch said. That's two strikes on you right there. And he was raised there, citified, preppy type. Papa's boy, Ivy Leaguer. He didn't get any bones broke falling off horses, lose a finger in a hay baler, didn't pay his dues, you know. You don't have to actually do anything to have folks down on you.
How about the widow?
You hear anything specific about her? Don't hear nothing about her except some fellas guessing, and she's a real pretty woman. So that was probably just them wishing, Finch said. He was grinning at Chi.
You know how it works. If you're behaving yourself, it's not interesting.
The front door of the Breedlove house opened, and Chi could see someone standing behind the screen looking out at them. He picked up his evidence satchel and stepped out of the vehicle.
I'll wait here for you, Finch said, and maybe scout around a little if I get too stiff from sitting.
Mrs. Elisa Breedlove was indeed a real pretty woman. She seemed excited and nervous, which was what she had expected. Her handshake grip was hard, and so was the hand. She led him into a huge living room, dark and cluttered with heavy, old-fashioned furniture. She motioned him into a chair, explaining that she'd had to run into Mancus to get some stuff. I got back just before you drove up, and Ramona told me you'd called and were coming. I hope I'm not... she began, but she cut him off. No, no, she said. I appreciate this. Ramona said you'd found Hal, or think so, but she didn't know anything else. Well, she said, and paused. What we found was merely bones. We thought they might be Mr. Breedlove. He sat on the edge of the sofa watching her. Bones, she said. Just a skeleton? Was that the skeleton they found about Halloween up on Shiprock? Yes, ma'am. We wanted to ask you to look at the clothing and equipment he was wearing and see if... tell us if it was the right size and if you thought it was your husband's stuff. Equipment? She was standing beside a table, her hand on it. The light slanting through windows on each side of the fireplace illuminated her face. It was a small, narrow face, framed by light brown hair, the jaw muscles tight, the expression tense. Middle 30s, Chi guessed. Slender, perfectly built, luminous green eyes, the sort of classic beauty that survived sun, wind, and hard winters, and didn't seem to require the disguise of makeup. But today, she looked tired. He thought of a description Finch had applied to a woman they both knew, been rode hard and put up wet. Mrs. Breedlove was waiting for an answer, her pale blue eyes fixed on his face. Mountain climbing equipment, she said. I understand the skeleton was in a cleft down the face of a cliff. Presumably the man had fallen. Mrs. Breedlove closed her eyes and bent slightly forward with her hips against the table. She rose. Are you all right? All right, she said, but she put a hand against the table to support herself. Would you like to sit down, a drink of water? Why do you think it's Hal? Her eyes were still closed. He's been missing for 11 years, and... we're told he was a mountain climber, is that correct? He was. He loved the mountains. This man was about 5 feet 9 inches tall, Chi said. The coroner estimated he would have weighed about 150 pounds. He had perfect teeth, he had rather long fingers, and Hal was about 5'8", I'd say. He was slender, muscular, an athlete. I think he weighed about 160. He was worried about gaining weight. She produced a weak smile. Around the belt line, before we went on that trip, I let out his suit pants to give him another inch. He'd had a broken nose, Chi continued. Healed. The doctor said it probably happened when he was an adolescent. And a broken wrist. He said that was more recent. Mrs. Breedlove sighed. The nose was from playing fraternity football, or whatever the boys play at Dartmouth, and the wrist when a horse threw him after we were married. She opened the satchel, extracted the climbing equipment, and stacked it on the coffee table. It wasn't much. A nylon belt harness, the ragged remains of a nylon jacket, even more fragmentary remains of trousers and shirt, a pair of narrow shoes with soles of soft, smooth rubber, a little rock hammer, 3 pitons, and a couple of steel gadgets that Chi presumed were used somehow for controlling rope slippage. When he glanced up, Mrs. Breedlove was staring at them, her face white. She turned away, facing the window, but looking at nothing except some memory. I thought about Hal when I saw the piece the paper had on the skeleton, she said. Eldon and I talked about it at supper that night. He thought the same thing I did. We decided it couldn't be Hal. She attempted a smile. He was always into derring-do stuff, but he wouldn't try to climb Shiprock alone. Nobody would. That would be insane. 2 great rock men were killed on it, and they were climbing with teams of experienced experts. She paused, listening. The sound of a car engine came through the window.
That was before the Navajos banned climbing, she added. Are you a climber? When I was younger, she said. When Hal used to come out, Eldon started teaching him to climb, Hal and his cousin George. Sometimes I would go along and they taught me. How about Ship Rock? She asked. Did you ever climb it? She studied him. The tribe prohibited that a long time ago, before I was big enough to climb anything. She smiled. But some people still climbed it. Quite a few, from what I hear. And there's not actually a tribal ordinance against it. It's just that the tribe stopped issuing those backcountry permits, you know, to allow non-Navajos the right to trespass. Mrs. Breedlove looked thoughtful. Through the window came the sound of a car door slamming. To make it perfectly legal, you'd go see one of the local people who had a grazing permit running up to the base and get him to give you permission to be on the land, she added. But most people even don't bother to do that. Mrs. Breedlove considered this, nodded. We always got permission. I climbed it once. It was terrifying. With Eldon, Hal, and George, I still have nightmares. About falling? She shuddered. I'm up there looking all around, looking at Ute Mountain up in Colorado, and seeing the shape of Casa del Eco Mesa in Utah, and the Carrizos in Arizona, and Mount Taylor, and I have this dreadful feeling that Ship Rock is getting higher and higher, and then I know I can never get down. She laughed. Fear of falling, I guess. Or fear of flying away and being lost forever. I guess you've heard our name for it, she said. Tsebitai, the rock with wings. According to the legend, it flew here from the north, bringing the first Navajos on its back. Maybe it was flying again in your dream. A voice from somewhere back in the house shouted, Hey, sis, where are you? What's that Navajo police car doing parked out there? We've got company, Mrs. Breedlove said, barely raising her voice. In here. She stood. A man wearing dusty jeans, a faded jean jacket with a torn sleeve and well-worn boots walked into the room. He held a battered gray felt hat in his right hand. Mr. Chi, said Mrs. Breedlove, this is my brother Eldon, Eldon DeMott. Oh, DeMott said. Hello. He shifted his hat to his left hand and offered Chi the right one. His grip was like his sister's, and his expression was a mixture of curiosity, worry, and fatigue. They think they've found Hal, Elisa Breedlove said. You remember talking about that skeleton on Ship Rock? The Navajo police think it must be him. DeMott was eyeing the little stack of climbing equipment on the table. He sighed, slapped the hat against his leg. I was wrong, then, if it really is Hal, he said. That makes him a better climber than I gave him credit for, climbing that sucker by himself and getting that high. He snorted. And a hell of a lot crazier, too. Do you recognize any of this? She asked, indicating the equipment. DeMott picked up the nylon belt and examined it. He was a small man, wiry, a man built of sun-scorched leather, bone and gristle, with a strong jaw and a receding hairline that made him look older than he probably was. It's pretty faded out, but it used to be red, he said, and tossed it back to the tabletop. He looked at his sister, his face full of concern and sympathy. Hal's was red, wasn't it? It was, she said. You all right?
I'm fine, she said.
And how about this Jumar? Didn't you fix one for Hal once?
By God, DeMott said, and picked it up.
It reminded Chi of an oversized steel pretzel with a sort of ratchet device connected. Chi had wondered about it and concluded that the ratchet would allow a rope to slip in one direction and not the other. Thus, it must be used to allow a climber to pull himself up a cliff. DeMott obviously knew what it was for. He was examining the place where the ratchet had been welded to the steel.
I remember I couldn't fix it. Hal and you took it into Mancus and had Gus weld it, DeMott said to Elisa. It sure looks like the same one.
I guess we can close this up, then, Chee said. I don't see any reason for you going down to Shiprock to look at the bones, unless you want to.
DeMott was inspecting one of the climbing shoes.
The soles must be all the same, he said. At least all I ever saw was just soft, smooth rubber like this, and his were white, and he had little feet, too.
He glanced at Elisa.
How about the clothing? That looked like Hal's?
The jacket, yes, she said. I think that's Hal's jacket. Something in her tone caused Chee to glance back at her. She held her lips pressed together, face tense, determined somehow not to cry. Her brother didn't see that. He was studying the artifacts on the table.
It's pretty tore up, DeMott said, poking the clothing with a finger. You think coyotes? But from what the paper said, it would be too high for them.
Way too high, Chee said.
Birds, then, DeMott said. Ravens, vultures, and...
He cut that off with a repentant glance at Elisa. She picked up the evidence valise and stuffed the tattered clothing into it, getting it out of Elisa's sight. I think I should go to Shiprock, Elisa said. She looked away from Chi and out the window. To take care of things. Hal would have wanted to be cremated, I think, and his ashes scattered in the San Juan Mountains.
Yeah, DeMott said. Over in the La Plata range on Mount Hesperus. That was his very favorite.
We call it Debenitsa'a, Chi said.
He thought of a dead man's ashes drifting down on serene slopes that the spirit called First Man had built to protect the Navajos from evil. First Man had decorated the mountain with jet-black jewelry to fend off all bad things. But what could protect it from the invincible ignorance of this white culture? These were good, kind people, he thought, who wouldn't knowingly use corpse powder, the Navajo symbol for the ultimate evil, to desecrate a holy place. But then climbing Shiprock to prove that man was the dominating master of the universe was also a desecration. It's our sacred mountain of the north, Chi said. Was that what Mr. Breedlove was trying to do, put his feet on top of all our sacred places? Having said it, Chi instantly regretted it. This was not the time or place to show his resentment. He glanced at DeMott, who was looking at him, surprised. But Elisa Breedlove was still staring out the window. Hal wasn't like that, she said. He was just trying to find some happiness, she said. Nobody had ever taught him anything about sacred things. The only god the Breedloves ever worshipped was cast out of gold.
I don't think Hal knew anything about your mythology, DeMott agreed. It's just that Hesperus is over 13,000 feet and an easy climb.
I like them high and easy, and I guess Hal did too.
She considered that.
Why Shiprock, then? I know it's killed some people. I've heard it's one of the hardest climbs.
Yeah, DeMott said. Why Shiprock? And why by himself? And if he wasn't by himself, how come his friends just left him there, didn't even report it?
Chi didn't comment on that. Elisa was still staring blindly out the window.
How high did he get?
DeMott asked.
Chi shrugged. Close to the top, I think. I think the rescue party said the skeleton was just a couple of 100 feet down from the crest.
I knew he was good, but if he got that high all by himself, he was even better than I thought, DeMott said.
He'd gotten past the hardest parts.
He'd always wanted to climb Shiprock, Elisa said. Remember?
I guess so, DeMott said thoughtfully.
I remember him talking about climbing El Diente and Lizard's Head. I thought they were next on his agenda.
He turned to Chi, frowning.
Have you fellas looked into who else he might have climbed with? I have trouble believing he did that alone.
I guess he could have, and he was reckless enough to try it. But it damn sure wouldn't be easy, not getting that high.
It's not a criminal case, Chi said. We're just trying to close up an old missing person file.
But who the hell would go off and leave a fallen man like that? Not even report so the rescue people could go get him. You think they was afraid you Navajos would arrest him for trespassing? He shook his head. Or the way things are now, maybe they thought they'd get sued. He laughed, put on his hat. But I gotta get moving. Good to meet you, Mr. Chi, he said, and was gone. I've got to be going, too, Chi said. He dumped the rest of the equipment in the valise. She walked with him to the door, opened it for him. He pulled at the valise zipper, then stopped. He should really leave this stuff with her. She was the widow. It was her property. Mr. Chi, she said. The skeleton. Were the bones all broken up? No, Chi said. Nothing broken. And all the joints were still articulated. From Elisa's expression, he first thought she didn't understand that anthropology jargon. I mean, the skeleton was all together in one piece, and nothing was broken. Nothing was broken? She repeated. Nothing. And then he realized the expression reflected disbelief and shock. Why shock? Had Mrs. Breedlove expected her husband's body to be broken apart? Why would she? If he asked her why, she'd say it must have been a long fall. He zipped the valise closed. He'd keep these artifacts from the fallen man, at least for a while.